You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition. I'm Anthony Castrovinson. Joining us live from Starbucks, working on an off-day feature, a writer never stops, Jordan Bastion. JB, talking about the rotation a little bit. So, speaking of writing, I'm working on this story, you know, kind of assessing spring injuries and how big of a deal are each of them on their own, and kind of rating them on a scale of 1 to 10. The Gavin Floyd injury for the Indians, we know he's out indefinitely, possibly for the whole season. We know they were counting on him to eat up some innings and to shore up a rotation that leans more towards young and inexperienced. So in your opinion, 1 to 10, basically, so you can help write my column for me, but what number do you assign that one?
I mean, honestly, I mean, that one kind of registers, I'd say maybe a 5.
Okay.
And I say that not because it's not a devastating loss, in terms of for Floyd and his career potentially, and obviously this is a guy they were counting on for innings, but the Indians went into the offseason with their 5 starters intact, a group that led the American League in ERA in the second half, some guys with a lot of high upside that we obviously all know about now, Kluber and Carrasco and Trevor Bauer could be poised for a breakout year here, so. Yeah, I think the addition of Floyd was meant to lengthen out the depth chart because every team knows that they're not going to go through an entire year with 5 starters and 5 starters only. But in that sense, you take them off the depth chart and you still have the group that they had at the end of the year. So in that sense, I don't think it's a devastating blow to the Indians, but it obviously does create a little bit more of a headache in terms of trying to plan for maintaining depth. They have guys like Sean Markham and Bruce Chen in the mix, but each of them have an out clause. You've got Zach McAllister, who's out of minor league options. So, should you try and exhaust him as a starter before you consider putting him in the bullpen to maintain that layer of depth? So I think that's where it's affected the Indians the most, is maintaining that depth. But I don't think it's a devastating injury in terms of what their rotation can do this year.
I think 5 is a strong argument. In my rough draft, I've got it at 4 only because Floyd is going to make $4 million this year, and that's a nice, easy correlation there. But certainly in that range and all good points there. One guy who interests me is Sean Markham. He's had a decent camp trying to come back from thoracic outlet syndrome that's wiped him out the last couple of years. And, maybe he's that guy who ends up being the veteran who eats up some innings, but obviously a big question mark there given his past injury woes. So what have you seen from Markham this spring? How realistic a possibility is he? I know he has an out clause at the end of camp. Where do things stand with him?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that they've been watching with him is the way he's been bouncing back from outings, strictly because, as you mentioned, he hasn't pitched that much over the last 2 years. So they've sort of throughout the camp here been, they started with more days off in between outings than usual at the beginning. Now they're kind of decreasing that to get him more on a regular 5-day type program. And so far they've been pleased with how he's been able to bounce back. I mean, Markham's never a guy that threw hard. His ability to survive in the AL East was very reliant on his changeup and on mixing speeds and just kind of being that control type pitcher. So, that's a guy that if he's, back to health and he can bounce back and if he's willing to possibly go to AAA because, he said it the other day, he feels like he kind of owes this organization for allowing him to rehab for the last 2 years or year plus. If he's there, that's a good veteran arm to have there, a guy who's been through it back when the AL East was, very tough to go through. Again, he's bouncing back good. It'll be interesting to see if he winds up at AAA. I don't see him as a leading candidate for one of the 2 spots in the rotation, though.
Right, and that's going to be a kind of delicate situation for him at the end of camp. I mean, who knows what interest will be out there elsewhere. We see guys breaking down left and right in Florida and Arizona. We saw last year the Braves scoop up Aaron Harang late in camp, and he worked some magic for them early last season. So that'll be a tough call, but you always like to hear a guy who does feel a bit indebted to an organization that has stuck with him here for a little bit. So see how that shakes out. But Francisco Lindor, this is a guy, a lot of eyes on him, Indians top prospect and just a flashy player defensively
and really a fun kid to get to know. Really, I don't know if you call it cockiness or confidence, but it's somewhere in that range, and really just a lot of fun to watch. So what are your impressions of him from the spring? We know he's you know, not going to seize the opening day starting shortstop job, but it sounds like he's been pretty impressive all around.
Yeah, I mean, he's more and more, as we see this kid step into the lineup, just he looks like he fits. It doesn't, you know, you start to forget that you're watching a prospect that's getting at bats with the big league team. You start to just view him as this guy that just he fits in the lineup, and he's fit defensively, and he's had what I've thought would be surprising power for the type of hitter that we kind of, you know, have envisioned through his development. So I think the one thing that stands out with him really, and anyone that you talk to who has been around him will typically say the same thing, that he does come across as very confident, but he does it in a way where it doesn't come across as cocky. You know, I think that's a tough act for a young kid to pull off, especially a first rounder. And so you do get that sense of, you know, kind of that mature beyond his years element to him. And it's true. It is there. I mean, you can talk to a kid for a couple minutes and walk away with that impression. So it'll be an interesting one to watch. I mean, I think at some point this year, I think he's up in the big leagues. I don't think there's any getting around that. It'll be interesting to see what the timing of it will be. Is it contingent on what Jose Ramirez is doing or not doing in the big leagues? Is it going to be down the stretch when they're, you know, maybe looking to have a spark when they're potentially in a playoff run? But I think at some point this kid's going to be in the big leagues. And we were talking the other day about AAA last year, because if you look at his AAA numbers, his strikeout rate went up, his on-base percentage went down. It kind of went against the grain of what he had done up to that point in his career. And what he told us was he felt, because he had all of a sudden been developing some power, he had two home runs in all of 2013, and all of a sudden he was hitting for a little more pop last year, that he felt he just got a little carried away with it. So he's cognizant of that, of the fact that he needs to find that balance between, being that put the ball in play, wreak havoc on the bases type performer, but now all of a sudden realizing he can drive the ball with a little more power than he did earlier in his career.
Well, I'm glad he's cognizant of it, and hopefully he doesn't, you know, delve down the Asdrubal Cabrera path of you know, overswinging, going for the power at the expense of the hit tool. He's got a great hit tool. So another young guy who's fun to watch, and he was profiling more towards a utility type of situation, but Zach Walters has the torn oblique, and kind of a bummer there. There was a guy who had some versatility and probably could have fit into this roster given Nick Swisher's timetable at the moment. How frustrated is he with his situation?
Pretty frustrated. You could tell he was pretty dejected the first day that he got hurt. He actually didn't talk to us, and you know, it was understandable. He's still kind of coping with the realization of kind of the magnitude of that injury, and obliques, you know, are always a tricky thing for hitters to come back from. But when we spoke to him the next day, I mean, he sounded like, he sounded confident that he was in a pretty good spot to potentially be on that opening day roster, and I think that also played into, you know, some of that being dejected about the injury, because he did have a good shot. He's a really intriguing guy. He's a guy that they were running around the infield playing all four spots. He can play the corner outfield spots. He switch hits. You know, I've kind of said that in a perfect world scenario, maybe he develops into Terry Francona's Ben Zobrist. You know, this guy who you could put around at a bunch of different positions, keep him in there as a kind of a regular part of the lineup, but where you could slot him in so many different ways and provide some pretty impressive power. So, you know, that's going to be probably a 3-4 week comeback for him. And, you know, I would imagine under the circumstances, probably begin in the minor leagues just to get kind of those at bats and get reps under his belt and kind of go through his personal spring training again, so to speak, before he becomes an option again for the Indians. But when he is an option, yeah, I mean, I think he's one of the most intriguing guys they have in the fold right now.
Shifting gears, Corey Kluber's contract has been a talking point. He re-signs, at a very low rate. Obviously, he's still in his pre-arbitration years, and the Indians are a really good spot with him contractually. Let's be honest, the guy has a breakout year, and he's in a mature age in his peak years, and they've got him under control for the foreseeable future. So we talked about before, there's probably not great incentive on the Indians' part to do anything too drastic with Kluber. Again, especially when you see so many guys breaking down all over baseball. What's your take on all that, JB?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know. I mean, there's like very little to no precedent for his situation.
Right.
And I think that also plays into it as well. I mean, you have situations where guys have broken out this early in terms of service time, but his breakout coincides with the fact that he's going to be 29. I mean, so you have not only that element of he's a pitcher and there's the risk of the long-term contract for any pitcher, but he's also already a late bloomer in terms of age going against his service time. So, yeah, I mean, if I were the Indians, I might just say, hey, you know, let's just go through this year, see what happens. Can he repeat it again? You know, maybe revisit it later. I don't sense the urgency to get it done now. But you could make that argument that you want to try and curb the arbitration salaries from getting out of control if he does continue to be the Cy Young level. And I know his agents are out here right now. I believe they're here this week for a few more days. So there obviously will be some conversations. Today being a team off day, I would imagine they'd be talking today about it. But I'm not overly optimistic that something gets done. Again, as you said, I don't know if something needs to get done from the Indian standpoint. This is a guy they have under their control, and they know they have him at a low rate this year. I kind of laugh when people on Twitter are like, you know, say that they should be paying the Cy Young winner more money right now. It's, well, if you're a businessman, why would you? I mean, they're paying them what they have to pay them, and they're actually paying them more than they have to pay him. So I think that right now it's a good situation for the Indians. And it's hard to know who has the most leverage there. Right now I would lean on the side of Cleveland.
Well, good stuff from Jordan Bastian, and more coming. We mentioned he's cooking up his off-day feature as we record this, and sounds like a good one about T.J. House almost eating himself out of the organization, basically, some years back, and now he's established himself as a legit back-of-the-rotation starter.
Yeah, it's a good story. Callaway kind of got in his ear after the 2011 season in Kingston. A year later, House shows up 3 pounds lighter, kind of rededicated himself, and, you know, the Indians were basically about to release this kid from minor league camp in 2012 spring training, and he performed and pitched his way back into the mix. And now Callaway's his pitching coach in the big league, so it's a pretty good story for those two.
And they still have that deep young rotation with or without Gavin Floyd. So, okay, JB says a 5, I say a 4. We'll split the difference. We'll call it a 4.5 out of 10 on the freak out factor scale. And thank you all for listening in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is now available. Watch over 250 spring training games and every regular season game live or on demand in true HD. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription, allowing you to watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices, every night, on every device. Visit MLB.tv for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply.